Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon now joining me here on The Score. Joe, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Lawrence. How you doing? Really a pleasure to be with you. I want you to know that, too.
I feel the same way. I'm looking forward to this being a fun and fruitful weekly conversation about baseball and life. So I've got a lot of stuff that I want to ask you. Starting off, we had a conversation during our transition segment about the outside looking out and the inside, you know, the inside looking out and the outside looking in, where Cubs fans on the outside are there is this kind of urgency that already we've noticed with them, and they're on the outside looking in. I'd love to know what your perspective is looking out at everything that surrounds this season of Cubs baseball.
Well, you know, obviously after the quick ejection last year, things have taken on a different level of scrutiny, and I understand where the fans are coming from, and I love the fact we have so many of them and that they are paying attention. So none of that honestly bothers me whatsoever, and I enjoy it. I think it's great. I mean, there's a lot of other teams and organizations who would love to have that kind of support from a fan base. And so if these folks have been Cubs fans for so many years, they're invested, they feel like they know us really well. And so if they're disappointed, we understand that. But that's what a fan should do. Now, from the inside looking out, man, this is like our fourth game. And on top of that, we played three really good games before that. Yesterday was a bad game. I cannot deep end yesterday any way, shape, or form. It got off poorly, and it just got worse. But the three games in Texas, we actually played great baseball. We just pitched a couple bad innings there, and you know, we just couldn't find the plate a couple times. But as a purist for baseball concern, hitting, running the bases, making plays on defense, not missing a sign, there were so many things that we did well in those three games and came up short because we didn't kick the last field goal. But so I understand fans' perspective inside looking out. Our guys have had coming off a great spring training. The interaction cannot be better. Everybody's absolutely reading from the same sheet of music, so you just got to press on.
You talk a lot about using negative moments as teaching moments. So what things can be learned from last night?
Well, the biggest thing is to crumple it up and throw it in the trash can, quite frankly. I mean, the stuff that happened, I mean, a fly ball dropped, Javi calling off the left fielder, and then another ball drops. Bodie making a great play and then should not have even tried to flip the ball, just hold on to it. Most of our mistakes last night were more mental than physical, just trying to make plays that weren't there kind of a thing. So the big thing is to continue to communicate on defense. honestly, that really wasn't a teachable moment last night. We made some mental mistakes, but probably the thing is that I've talked about this forever, that physical mistakes are part of our game. Mental mistakes have no part in our game, and we really talk about this a lot in camp. So it was unfortunate. We didn't play well. It was a bad day, but we got to move on. That's the beautiful part about baseball. We would have preferred to have been playing again today as opposed to having to wait a day, but that's the way it works sometimes. So I just keep doing what we've been doing all camp. It was a great camp, and I'm really not concerned.
What's your approach when you have some of the physical errors that go on in talking to a player? Does it even need to be discussed with a player, or do you like to make sure that if you see something, you want to point it out to someone?
Well, again, it's more when you want to point out the mental mistakes much more in detail than the physical ones. Physically, guys know when they make a mistake normally, and that's for me, for the coaches. If I see something when it comes to a physical mistake, I prefer the coaches handle their own departments. And physical mistakes, again, they happen. This game's not that easy. People sometimes think that it is. So if this physical mistake, Butter will review it. We'll review it with the players, Borzello with our catchers, whatever. So the physical component, that's actually the easiest part of the game to teach. Physical mechanics are easy to teach. Mental mechanics require redundancy. And it's a little bit more difficult to get your mental points across a lot of times. And being together for several years now, our guys kind of understand where we're coming from with all this. And so the conversations are not difficult at all. Their guys are really wonderful at accepting constructive criticism. So as a coach, you never, ever let the mental mistake go. You have to address that. The physical mistake, you can just look at the guy and he'll just look at you and you know that he knows how he screwed it up. So it's there's all different methods of communication going on, but never let the mental mistake go.
Lawrence Holmes talking baseball with Joe Maddon. We're going to do this every Tuesday at noon. Whenever I've been to the ballpark, I've observed you as a hands-on manager. I'm curious, is there anything that you've changed in approaching this season as far as that goes, where it's maybe you doing a little bit more of one thing and less of another?
You know, you're right. There's very little difference between now and what happened in the past. I mean, a lot was made of it. But I'm trying to do, like in spring training, though, for instance, I was really involved in a situational hitting. We called it opportunity hitting. I was involved a lot with the pitchers hitting and trying to help them mechanically also. So I was involved in a lot more hitting, per se, during spring training. It was try to take a load off Pochi and Trammell because there's a lot going on offensively. So these guys had them pretty much all day, but I had my little segment right before lunch, almost daily, and using my small ball machine, it's these smaller baseballs thrown at 100 miles an hour, basically from 6 to 33 feet. It's actually 60-some miles an hour, but the time to get there is about 100. So really working situations and trying to pound that kind of stuff home. And then the other part I'd say was a little bit different has been the the projection of lineups for an entire series. Normally I work one day in advance with the players. Now I'm working like a series in advance with the players. It seems like they like the idea of knowing a little bit sooner what it's going to look like over the next couple of days. And it's good because sometimes players think you don't play them the next day because they had a bad game the previous game, which has nothing to do with anything for me ever. So now they can see in advance this is how it was set up regardless. So I like that transparency with the group too. With today's world, and we're part of it, the communication component and the young players, they like this kind of stuff, so I have no issues. So that's probably my biggest difference.
So when it comes to taking feedback, is being a guy in charge, how important is it for you to be an effective leader by taking feedback?
Oh, you have to be. That's been, it's been a part of my method for years. We've already talked about it. You kind of mentioned, learn from your negative moments. I can go through 1986 as a manager in Midland, Texas, and God, that was my most, I guess, learned year that I've ever had because I stunk so bad. And I remember all that. But since then, you have to be open to new suggestions. And part of that is, or new ideas, part of that is that you actually do listen and don't formulate your response while somebody's speaking with you. I really try to cultivate good listening habits for a year. And I think that's what we're really talking about now. When you are willing to grow, you have to listen. And you can't always think that you're right all the time, which, believe it or not, I don't believe that at all. I feel convicted in what I do believe, but my goodness, I'm always looking for a better way. So I think listening is one of those things. And 1986 taught me how to be a better listener, man, as I move forward. So I'm wide open for new thoughts and ideas.
What types of mistakes do you feel like you made in that season that kind of forced your hand in becoming a better listener?
Well, I took two things too personally. I'll just give you a broad perspective. We were pretty bad and, had a lot of players from different organizations. And, again, we didn't win like we should have, but again, took it personally and it should not have. And when you do that, then you lash out. One of the things that, you know, a lot of times, even as a manager with the Rays, fans always want you to get angry and say things badly about your players publicly. And I really eventually figured out whenever you do that, you're pretty much defending yourself. Whenever you hear any coach or manager saying something negatively about his player or group in public, he's pretty much defending himself. And so that's not that I was heavily involved in that back then, but that really came to light for me because when you take it personally, then it does become personal and you lose your professionalism, you lose your ability to communicate. So that's what it was, and I'm having regarding that particular time frame. I'm going to bring that out slowly as we move forward over the next couple of years. But for right now, it was a personal situation that I reacted to poorly.
This hour is being brought to you by First American Bank, the largest privately held bank in Illinois. We do more for your money. Joe, it's a weird place that you have had this tremendous success over the last few years with the Cubs, and yet, even with that success, you walk into a season that's pressure-packed. What's that like?
Fun. Absolute fun. Cannot have more fun on a daily basis. I've talked about this before, and I mean this sincerely. If people are throwing that word around, pressure, expectations, that's where you want to be. I don't want to be somewhere where that's not part of the culture. So that was, believe it or not, 2015. Think about walking in the door in 2015 and not having had won a World Series yet, not having had been to the playoffs in a bit, and then you run through it 4 years in a row. So, again, I think a lot of this narrative is very skewed. A lot of it's misunderstood. And if I try to defend myself, then, again, I think it comes across as making excuses, so I refuse to do that. I'm pretty happy with what we've done over the last 4 years. I think if you had written a script before I had arrived, I think almost 100% of the folks would have been happy with that script. So I get that, and I don't lose sight of that. I know where my focus is. It's on my guys. It's on my guys every day. It's to help my guys get better daily, and that includes my coaching staff and everybody I work with in that building. And I never lose sight of that. So regardless of outside noise, and believe me, brother, you know this, there's a lot of noise out there, not just in our world of sports, but everywhere, media, social media, whatever. Everybody's trying to drag people down these days, and it's really a bad narrative just in general, not just for me or in sports. And again, I'm very much aware of it. So you have to learn how to deal with that, learn to scrutinize and hold on to the things that really are well thought on that matter, and the stuff that does not, you just need to put in the trash can as quickly as possible.
What has the league told you about Carl Edwards' delivery?
That was funny. Yeah, the other day, actually, I'll give Bill Miller credit. Bill Miller's an umpire, a really good umpire. In spring training, he brought it to my attention, and then it was called the other day that Carl was, you know, when he hits the ground as he starts his delivery, comes back, kind of like Kenley Jensen, but he doesn't actually hit the ground with his delivery. The foot, like, just hovers above it a bit. Carl actually touches the ground and then delivers the ball. So they said that other touching of the ground is illegal. He can't touch the ground twice and then deliver. And I said, well, what's the difference of between that and the old school days when Warren Spahn would do like a double pump delivery with that back foot, and his delivery would touch the ground twice before he actually threw the baseball? What's the difference if you think about different pitchers today in the stretch as they come set? They'll tap the ground two or three times before they come set with the runner on base, and then they finally stop and then deliver the baseball. I think the biggest problem with this is that it looked different. And sometimes when things look differently, people run and try to create rules or theories from this observation. So, I'm fine with it because I actually like Carl's other delivery better. So it's not a big issue. But in the beginning, I have to defend Carl just in case he wanted to stay with it. So it's a kind of a non-issue for me. But I also believe that it may impact other dudes doing different things by opening up this version of Pandora's box.
What was the strategy behind it? Was it to get more fastball command? Was it to give the batter a different look?
You know, it was Carl. This is all him. It was not us. He did this over the offseason and came to, and it looked really good in spring training. Quite frankly, he threw the ball well. It kind of slowed him down. And again, this is with nobody on base. It's not with somebody on base. There's a difference. And it's almost like his version of his personal windup. So he was doing it. He was very effective. He was throwing strikes, fastball, mid-90s with a really good breaking ball. So it all looked good. And then the other night when he tried it, he was just first time out. Things got a little quick. He wasn't quite himself, and it didn't play well. And then they complained, even though their pitcher had been jumping through his set position also. Again, if they want to legislate, which it seems like MLB wants to. I mean, I'm not into legislating all this stuff unless it's absolutely necessary. But there's going to be some kind of stuff coming out, I'm sure, in the near future regarding this.
Okay, I'm. But I actually kind of like Carl's old delivery too, And I'm glad that he is going back to it because I think it might make him more effective. When it comes to the bullpen and how you have to set the bullpen day in and day out, would you prefer that guys had roles, or are you okay with trying to match up depending on what's happening in a particular day?
I've been doing this pretty much since 2008, and if you roll back the tape and look, I've had some really good bullpens since 2008 to present time, and outside of having a specific closer, the rest has been wide open. We went to the World Series in 2008 with the Rays because of J.P. Howell and Grant Balfour, what they did in the middle of the game. And what you need is a buy-in from these guys where they're not going to complain that they have to have this clearly defined moment, whether the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning guy, which really is. Now listen, if you were like Kansas City a couple years ago and their seventh, eighth, and ninth inning guy did not care to them, which was a right or left-handed hitter because their stuff was so oppressively good, that's different. But not everybody has those three guys. And unless you have those three guys, you need to mix and match. And you try to put your guys' best skills and abilities against the other teams. It's really simple. And it takes a lot of thought before the game. Some lineups are even more difficult to match up against just based on right. They go for right, left in their batting order, and then they might have a platoon situation that they're able to pop somebody, and that's where these neutral pitchers or reverse split guys are really important. So, again, a lot is made of all of this stuff that tried and true from back in the day, and that's I'm doing this for a solid 10 years. Had a couple really good closers, but to get to those closers, I've been doing this, and again, run back and look at the results of those bullpens. They've all been pretty good.
No, I remember. I absolutely hated Grant Balfour. I actually still do. For a very long time, I've hated him because I knew exactly what was going to happen when he would come in to finish out games. That's for sure.
One of the first guys with the elevated fastball. That's what he did. And if you remember that at bat against Orlando Cabrera, when he's with the White Sox at the Trop, and it was a little dust up, and OC did not like the way, because I had the OC also, and I was with the Angels. He did not like, you know, Grant's Australian histrionics, where he got really worked up over whatever. And it was a great moment, but that's what Balfour did. He was like one of the first fellows that came with the elevated fastball, made it popular.
Yeah, he was a real agitator on the mound.
Absolutely.
Like, he was looking to get into your head by saying all sorts of stuff, and that's why I hated him. I'm not going to...
So did Alan Hrabowski. He did pretty good with it, too.
No, there's no doubt. And I remember the exact at-bat that you're talking about, and I remember the reaction from it, too, which was great. I have an overall philosophical kind of question about your team and your clubhouse that I wanted to get to before we conclude. How do you think, considering the success and the youth of your team when they had success, how do you think your clubhouse has changed over the last 4 years?
It's primarily the difference is young players ascending to leadership roles. When they first came on, we definitely had to find really solid leadership. David Ross is a prime example of that. So when these guys came out of the womb to the major leagues, they were led properly. And then we kind of lost that kind of leadership in the clubhouse. And now it's resurfacing. Like Johnny Lester's really taken a great role. Cole Hamels is really got this guy is absolute aces. Then you got young guys coming in with Zobrist, of course. I love Daniel Descalso, but he's still feeling his way. And then Rizzo's becoming more of that guy as Baez is. So it's a natural progression. Just imagine these guys 3, 4, 5 years from now, crusty old veterans leading that next group. Because they're still going to be right around 30 years old when they get to that point. And they're going to lead this next new group that's coming up. It would be a great transition from one to the other. And especially because if you're able to keep the group together, this is the way we do things here, is always a wonderful thing to be able to say when somebody walks in the clubhouse. So it's primarily that. I mean, the difference overall is that other teams have done the same thing we did a couple years ago. The competition, the parity within our division is ridiculously good, and not throughout the National League. So it's not quite like it was a couple years ago, competitively speaking. It's gotten thicker. And so even though our young guys have gotten better, so have the young guys on other teams. I think it's going to be an outstanding baseball year in the National League. You're going to see a lot of guys really making their mark, and youthful guys making their mark as really solid major league players. So it's an interesting time, but the biggest difference in our club is now is just to regain a foothold on that kind of a leadership. And I should have mentioned Jason Hayward. That's what's happening right now.
Does criticism from a peer work better than criticism from a manager when it comes to poor play or poor preparation or poor execution?
Of course, and it always has. That's nothing new. Back in the day when criticism came from a superior, it was normally a yelling match. It was a shouting down. It was a superior to an inferior conversation. And it was absolutely, the attempt was done through intimidation as opposed to communication regarding making you a better player athlete. I don't like that method at all. But I've always felt even then, and just even when it comes to awards, an award that you receive based on peer vote is much more substantial to me as one given on by outside sources who really don't know. So peer pressure, peer criticism, peer policing, that's so much better. It's so much better, and it's not to denigrate the role of the manager, coaches, whatever. Just think about where you work, wherever you're at. If somebody you really respect that works alongside of you comes up and points something out, you will absolutely listen. If a superior does, a lot of times, you will run for the ally and try to work against whomever's coming at you a little bit, and you look for allies in order to fend off whatever this criticism was. But if it's a peer, you're not going to find an ally.
Well, Joe, I appreciate you. This was great. I enjoyed the first conversation. The next time that I see you, I actually want to pass along a book to you because I know that you've been doing all of the millennial stuff, but I actually think that you might want to now start checking out a book called Gen Z at Work, the next group of kids that you're going to have to deal with.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So I teach, and I've seen this transition start to already happen. So the next time I see you, I'm going to bring you this book so you can check it out.
I would appreciate that.
Joe,
thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a great day, brother. Thank you, man.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.